Joe Harris still looking for his first field goal. Here's a long three from Perez as he delivers the bomb from straight away. He was 5 feet behind the arc when he knocks down that long one.
Yeah, Dave Kane agreeing with what I said earlier that the Harris three and at least one of London's threes were deep threes. But nevertheless, big baskets in the game in the second half where Virginia took control of the game. You're listening to Who's Talking, Hobble and Frank here, and we're joined on the phone by Dave Glenn of the ACC Sports Journal. Dave, we appreciate you taking a couple of minutes to join us tonight.
Jim and Frank, it's always great to be on with you guys. Hope you're doing well.
All right. From the Atlantic Coast Conference standpoint, you look at it from the overall league. How surprising has it been for others in the ACC to look at the kind of year Virginia's had?
Well, on the one hand, it's surprising to see the Cavaliers with only one ACC loss and already clinching the outright regular season title. That is a surprise. On the other hand, I've been at this for 27 years now. I don't remember a lot of years where the Cavaliers were picked to finish in that top three or four. We had them third in the preseason, in our preseason rankings, and a lot of others had the Cavaliers pretty far up their ladder as well. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag until you get down to the specifics. And some of these specifics are just so amazing. I mean, maybe even 17-1, and that number one seed at the ACC tournament. Even if you had high expectations for the Cavs, as most of us did, these kinds of accomplishments even went beyond those types of expectations.
Dave, we thank you for joining us tonight on a very snowy mm-hmm. night where the temperature is supposed to drop way down to like the single digits, which is kind of creepy, but thank you for joining us.
It's that global warming. I always say, how cold would it be if it weren't for global warming? You know,
we've had our share here in North Carolina too. Believe me.
We know. We saw some of the video of those traffic jams. It's exciting that four teams are in the top 15. You know, you got Duke at four, UVA at number five, Syracuse is hanging on at seven, and North Carolina climbing quickly to number 14 and. What are your thoughts about those teams?
Well, it's great to see the ACC back in that kind of a conversation. I actually was asked by some UVA fans, you know, what was the other best team from UVA I've seen in my time that dates to the late 1980s? So I came along after, you know, those great Ralph Sampson years and the Final Four year in that same area. And I thought of a year, 1995, as probably the best UVA team I remember, coached by Jeff Jones, led by Harold Dean and Junior Burrow. That was another year where four of the best teams in the country, maybe the best dozen or so, were from the ACC. It was UVA, it was Wake, it was North Carolina, Maryland. You know, Maryland had Joe Smith. Carolina had Stackhouse and Wallace. Wake had Childress and Tim Duncan. And UVA had its guys. And we haven't had as many years where we're talking about four of the top dozen or so being from the ACC. We haven't had as many of those years lately. So what I'm excited about, guys, in a season where the ACC has taken a lot of bullets, so to speak, for not being, you know, number one or two or three in the conference power rankings, I always say that when March Madness rolls around, it doesn't matter what the midsection of your league looks like, and it doesn't matter what the bottom tier of your league looks like. If your one, two, three, four teams are really good, and I think those four you mentioned are UVA and Syracuse and Duke and UNC, well, then the other 10 or 11 are going to be forgotten while those four are kind of carrying the flag for the ACC. And really, it boils down to how well they do at the ACC tournament, how well they do in the NCAA tournament, and maybe how much help they get from teams like Pitt or if Florida State makes the big dance. This could be a league that has not only power at the very top, but even a little depth if they get those fifth and sixth teams into the NCAA tournament.
All right, you've touched upon a couple of questions I'd like to ask you. And by the way, we're visiting with Dave Glenn of the ACC Sports Journal. You know, the other team other than Virginia in the ACC that really has been hot of late is the North Carolina Tar Heels. What do you think has turned their season around with them having started 1-4? And I think the last game they lost was to Virginia in Charlottesville. They haven't lost since.
Yeah, it's a combination of things. One, Marcus Page, who's been as close to a constant as the Heels have had all season, he's gotten even better, which was hard to believe here down the stretch. And then beyond that, instead of being a one-man show, as he was early in the season when the Tar Heels were riding a roller coaster, James Michael McAdoo, not every single night, but as a junior forward, he has been much more productive during conference play. And then on a given night, in a season where the Tar Heels are much better defensively than they usually are, and as you guys have seen with the Cavaliers, if your foundation is on defense, you're going to be more consistent than some of the roller coaster teams that may rely more on their offense. The defense has been the constant for UNC. Marcus Page has been the constant. McAdoo's development, and then on a given night, they have some other talented guys who are inconsistent, but Kennedy Meeks is a freshman center who's put the ball in the basket. Leslie McDonald, the senior guard, after his suspension, he's had big games against State and Duke and others. Bryce Johnson can be a double-double guy in points and rebounds. J.P. Tokoto just had maybe the best game of his career against NC State. So it certainly starts with Page and that defense. But the Tar Heels are finding that maybe not quite as much depth as UVA, but almost to that point. They have a half a dozen guys that on a given night can give them both the defense they need and then at least occasionally the offense they need in support of Marcus Page.
All right, a couple things. Duke is at number four. Syracuse is currently residing at number seven, giving the ACC three teams in the top ten, which is pretty awesome. Syracuse, Jeremy Grant has obviously got a back issue, and his inability to play is really hurting Syracuse because they need his rebounding. What do you think is going to happen to Syracuse? They've still got two more ACC games to go. They play Georgia Tech on Tuesday, and then the Cuse plays on Sunday at Florida State.
And the Seminoles may need that game to get an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. You know, you don't get too many opportunities at top 10 opponents, so that could be the difference for the Seminoles, which means they'll be even more jacked up. But you bring up a good point about Jeremy Grant. He is playing at an all-ACC level. I mean, among the top 15 players in the league, and he's only the third best guy on his own team behind Tyler Ennis and C.J. Fair. The problem at Syracuse, unlike UVA, UNC, and some of the others we're talking about, Jim Boeheim has overwhelmingly relied on his starting five. I mean, it is not unusual at all for those guys to play 35 to 40 minutes, even in a regular season game. And without one of them, well, you're going to a bench where they don't use more than one or two guys very often. And all of a sudden, you're asking Michael Benajay, who's played barely, any major important minutes against good teams, you're asking him to fill in some of Jeremy Grant's minutes, and it just doesn't work when Boeheim has used a six- or seven-man rotation for essentially the entire season. If you're going seven-man rotation and you lose somebody, you're really in the lurch because you're asking guys on big stages late in the season when they're not used to it, because of the way you kind of left them on the bench earlier in the year, you're asking for something close to a miracle. So I think the Cuse better hope Jeremy Grant gets healthy, because if they're going to continue to be one of the half dozen or so teams with the best chance at a national title, they're going to need Grant to be healthy to have that happen.
And then that brings us to Duke. Where do you think Duke sits right now? Obviously, they still have the big game against Carolina on Saturday. I don't think they have another game before then.
They play
no, that's not true. They play
at Wake.
So they play at Wake on Wednesday. Then they play again. They host Carolina on Saturday. So they still have two big games to go. What do you think about their play right now as they head into the ACC tournament?
It feels like an upside-down world to some degree, because so often we're describing the Blue Devils as defense first, and we're wondering whether their offense is going to come along. And we're usually describing the Tar Heels as offense first, and we're wondering if their defense is going to come along. All of that is upside down. I mean, this Duke team is one of the best offensive teams in the country, period. But it does not play anything close to what we're used to seeing from Mike Krzyzewski's team at that other end of the floor. So Jabari Parker's maybe the best freshman, maybe the national freshman of the year. He's a candidate for ACC Player of the Year. He might be the number one overall pick in next year's NBA draft or whenever he comes out. Rodney Hood is also an all-ACC caliber player on one of those teams. And beyond that, the Blue Devils just need to continue to get better defensively, and they really need to find more consistency in their backcourt. On a given night, Quinn Cook is really good, but then he looks not very good. On a given night, yeah. Rashid Soleiman is very good, but then he disappears on other nights. You guys know the deal. In March Madness, you need backcourt play, and the Blue Devils need to iron out the inconsistencies at guard if they're going to go as long as they want to go.
Yeah, and I see my theory on Duke is, you know, Parker's first year, Hood's a transfer guy, so I think some of these kids that they're relatively new to Coach K's system and don't necessarily understand the way he expects defense to be played. And, of course, that's one of the – going back to Tony Bennett in Virginia, Tony's recruiting guys that are going to be there by and large for the full 4 years.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, they sort of understand that if you don't play on the defensive end of the floor, you're not going to get on the floor.
Yeah, and Pitt builds its program in a very similar way under Jamie Dixon. And look at him. You know, he's been to, what, 9 of the last 10 and maybe 10 of 11 now counting this season NCAA tournaments. So everybody does it differently. Parker is not a good defender as a freshman at Duke. Even Quinn Cook, a veteran point guard, he's not a very good defender when it comes to stopping dribble penetration, for example. So, yeah, it's definitely not a vintage Duke team defensively, but it's going to be fun to watch. You know, UVA is defense first. Carolina is defense first. Duke is clearly offense first. Syracuse is probably defense first with that zone, but a little bit of a mixture. And Pitt, the other NCAA team, is defense first. So that's usually the more consistent foundation to build upon. You just need to find on a given night enough of those offensive producers, you know, to get past the kind of competition that you see in the latter rounds of the ACC tournament and in, you know, even the round of 32 and beyond come the NCAA tournament.
Well, you mentioned guard play, and I think that's one of the strengths of the Virginia team, particularly with the development of London Perrantes, and, you know, Malcolm Brogdon has just had a sensational year. Joe Harris probably has had a sacrificial year where he's given up some of his own individual numbers for the benefit of the team.
Yeah.
And you have to mention Justin Anderson, who quite possibly could be the best guy coming off the bench in the ACC at this stage.
Yeah, and I think one thing that the casual fan might not totally understand the way you guys do, having your front row seat for the Cavaliers, we're used to Joe Harris because he was first-team All-ACC last year and he's still a good player. We're not as used to Brogdon, you know, as one of these first-team All-ACC caliber guys. And these fans, I really don't think they understand, again, outside of those who love and follow UVA, London Perrantes was an interesting player early this year. He was poised. He was always calm and cool and collected, unselfish. But he has dramatically improved during the course of this season. So if you look at his numbers over the course of the year, I mean, heck, he was shooting 28% from the field a while back. He was averaging 2 or 3 points a game a while back. When you look at his numbers for the season, you might not realize, again, outside you guys and those who love the Cavaliers, you might not understand that those season-long numbers are tilted in a way that you don't understand. Well, that now he's shooting 40% from three-point land. Now, if you look at his recent games, he's shooting a much better percentage from the field. He's still the same great assist man. Very, very difficult to get him to turn the ball over. He's a 5-point-a-game scorer, but he's really more than that because of how much he's built momentum here in his freshman season. So when that ball, think about late-game situations, you know, in close games against good teams, that ball is going to be in the hands most of the time of Malcolm Brogdon, Joe Harris, and London Perrantes, and all three of those guys have proven that they are up to the task, especially late in this season in the case of Brogdon and Perrantes.
Dave, we really appreciate it. Your insights are terrific, so we appreciate your taking a couple of moments to join us. We all look forward to the ACC tournament and beyond, but we thank you for your time tonight.
I will be there in Greensboro. Look forward to seeing you guys and always appreciate the invitation.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dave.
Dave Glenn of the ACC Sports
care,
Journal, and we're also waiting to hear from Dr. Smith, right?
Yeah, Jody Smith is going to call in here momentarily. You know, interesting thing that Dave Glenn brought up, that's the excellent analysis of London Perrantes playing point guard. But as of today, London Perrantes is now number 3 in the conference with his assist to turnover ratio of 3.7. So he's averaging almost 4 assists for every turnover he makes, and that's very impressive.
Well, it just seems when you watch the team, particularly on the offensive end, they seem to be a little calmer and better organized when he's on the floor, and maybe that's just my imagination. And the other thing Dave Glenn referenced, in recent games, he's really made some big shots. You know, certainly in the Syracuse game he did, several of the games here recently, his three-point attempts have not only gone in, but they've been at big moments when Virginia needed to score and get a basket from the perimeter. So he really has made a huge difference in this team. And you look to last year, and the difference really, as you mentioned earlier, Brogdon back, Anthony Gill contributing on the offensive end, and as much as I love Jontel Evans because of his defensive ability, particularly Jontel's ability to guard the guy with the basketball, it really does make a difference when that guy out front is also a threat to shoot the ball, because certainly we're not going to see defenders backing off London Perrantes anytime soon.
No, and he's proven that he's very comfortable taking those shots. You know, interestingly enough, Tyler Ennis, who has had a whale of a season with some big game-winning shots and so forth, fouled out on Saturday, and he fouled out because of good team defense.
He was guilty of at least one charge. Was it one or two charges?
One or two sort of, as Coach Bennett puts it, you know, maybe a couple of fouls that he shouldn't have reached here, he shouldn't have run there, and it's interesting. Justin Anderson was guarding him quite a bit when he came in the game, and I think the combination of Perrantes and his subtle style, and obviously our buddy Justin Anderson really crowding him tight. He wore him down. And he got frustrated.
Why don't we go to our last break? When we come back, we very well may have Dr. Smith join us, but we do know we will have the Olympic report and some final thoughts when we return to Who's Talking after these messages.